Ray, we are looking at a tragedy in Gaza. The people were pushed to the southern part of Gaza in Rafah, and right now they are suffering from starvation. We've seen that the Irish people send a message, a video message to Joe Biden, reminding him of his ancestors.
We are here at the ancient graveyard of Kilwera in County Louth to send a message to you, President Biden, and to honour our ancestors and yours that are buried here. For centuries, Irish people lived in poverty, under occupation and oppression. During the Great Hunger of the 1840s, our British occupiers allowed 1 million Irish people to die of starvation and disease. 1 million were forced to emigrate, like your great-great-grandparents, Owen and Jane Finnegan, who sailed out of Carlingford Lough. Among their children on board was 7-year-old James, your great-grandfather. On St. Patrick's Day, when millions of Americans celebrate their Irish origins, we want you to hear this message from Ireland. We grew up with the terrible legacy of our ancestors forced from their homes, dying of hunger on the road. Their bodies were found with grass in their mouths. Because of our history, the Irish people will never forgive those who enable the oppression, ethnic cleansing and genocide of another people, as you have done in Gaza. In arming, financing and providing political cover for the Israeli regime, you have betrayed your Irish ancestors as you have betrayed humanity. We stand with the people of Palestine. End the genocide now and a permanent, lasting ceasefire.
Your take.
Yes, I suppose that I have to acknowledge that I have a certain identification with that, since I too have Irish ancestry. One would say that I'm 100% Irish, whether from County Galway or from County Gavin, or County Cavan, where the McGoverns come from. And so the message to Joe Biden from this very eloquent but soft-spoken Irish woman: the British starved the Irish, Mr. Biden. Your 7-year-old grandfather was lucky enough to flee on a boat with his parents. And yet you choose to make starvation, famine, genocide your legacy. Those are strong words, however soft spoken. Now, it was true that in the 1840s, there was famine in Ireland, but there was plenty of food. The Irish were exporting through the north all manner of meat and other food to the British to sell to the rest of their colonies. So it was a deliberate genocide. And there were songs about it. I mean, even in my youth in America, we used to hear this. Maybe I'll just sing one stanza of this little dirge having to do with the famine. Now, the potatoes failed. There was a disease in the potatoes, and they're called praties in Ireland. And the song went like this, if you'll bear with me. Ah, the praties, they are small over here, ah, the praties, they are small over here. Oh, the praties, they are small And we're going to the fall. And there's not enough for all over here. Well, that was the message we were getting from the Irish who were not lucky enough to get on one of those boats and sail to the United States. Now, all of this is very much in mind, of course, when we see what is happening in Gaza. A million Irish, 1 million, 2 million Palestinians in Gaza, starving to death. Many of them have already starved to death. What's happening? Well, the latest report is that a Spanish group, a public-spirited Spanish group, has a big barge with 200 tons of food. And they're in Gazan waters now, and they'd like to deliver them. And they need some sort of pier. And then what happens? Who controls the food? The same people who are blocking thousands, and I say again, thousands of trucks bearing food, can't get into Gaza. It's deliberate genocide, one form of which, of course, is starvation. The Israelis have said that they're going to attack Rafah. Rafah, a small part of southern Gaza, where 1.4 million of the Gazans have been drawn down to on the pretense that they'd be safe. And the Israelis say, oh, we'll create safe islands for the people and we'll just kill the Hamas people. Give me a break. That's not going to happen. They don't even know where the Hamas people are. So if I feel strongly about this, it's not just because of St. Patrick's Day. I was alive during World War II, and I remember what happened to the Jews. 6 million, genocide. 2 million, is that any less genocide? Now, it would be interesting to see if the food delivered by this Spanish outfit will be allowed into Gaza, because there's been a blockade against any deliveries by sea to Gaza for many years. As a matter of fact, in 2010, a Turkish ship, a big ship full of provisions for Gaza, was on its way there and it was attacked by the Israelis. 9 people were killed. One was an American citizen, 19 years old, killed. The United States made no protest against that. He was on the wrong ship at the wrong time, they said. My God, that was 2010. In 2011, a small group, including me, decided to create our own boat, our own U.S. registered boat. We called it the Audacity of Hope. The name of Obama's famous book. It was called The U.S. Boat to Gaza. There were many of us on it, 50 all told. Alice Walker, the poet and the writer, Medea Benjamin, all kinds of people, Robert Nyman, real justice people. And there were press on there. There were people from the New York Times there, the AP. And all we wanted to do was deliver some letters to Gaza. And guess what happened? We were told it was a bad idea. Let me give you some quotes here. Hillary Clinton, before we ever set sail, June 24th, 2011, at a press conference, this U.S. boat to Gaza, this boat called the Audacity of Hope, quote, would provoke actions by entering Israeli waters and creating a situation in which the Israelis have a right to defend themselves, against 50 Justice Americans trying to deliver letters of support to the people in Gaza, letters of solidarity. And here's Hillary Clinton's spokesperson. Her name is Victoria Nuland. At the same time, she said, groups that seek to break Israel's maritime blockade of Gaza are taking irresponsible and provocative actions that risk the safety of the passengers. What happened? Well, we were told at the time, I learned privately from a source I had that had contacts in the White House, that if we sailed to Gaza and the Israelis did to us what they had done to that Turkish ship the year before, that the White House would just as well see the bodies of us Americans brought back. Why? Well, because that would gain them points with the Israel lobby. Now, that was hard to believe, but I believed it. I reported it anyway. And my friend Craig Murray, ambassador, former British ambassador, who said, you know, McGovern is usually pretty reliable, but this sounds really off the wall. I'm going to check my own sources. He checked his own sources in the Foreign Service. He was a ambassador, okay? He checked with the State Department, run by Hillary Clinton at the time. He got the same answer. The White House would be just as pleased to have these people come back in small wooden boxes. My God. So just to finish up on this, we decided to sail despite the Greek government having been prevailed upon by the U.S. government not to let us out of the harbor at Athens, okay? They said we had a malfunction in our air conditioning system. So we couldn't sail. So we took a council of war. We said, let's go anyway. And we got 9 nautical miles out of Piraeus, out of the harbor at Athens. And we were intercepted by Greek torpedo boats. We had a standoff for about an hour, and the captain finally said, they're going to board us. They're going to do to us what the Israelis did to the Turkish ship last year. We got to turn around. We turned around, and that was the end of the U.S. boat to Gaza. Now, wasn't that an interesting reflection of how much influence the Israeli had over everyone, including Barack Obama, who prevailed upon the Greeks, don't let them out of the harbor. Why? Well, you know, you need an IMF loan, you Greeks. That's going to be hard to get if you let these guys get out of the harbor. It was that cynical. So that's some of the background to all this. We weren't bringing any foodstuffs. The Turks were. We had letters of solidarity. Now, that was July 2011. If you fast forward to the anniversary today of a woman named Rachel Corrie, I'm a very close friend of Craig and Cindy Corrie. Had a long talk with them just a few months after Rachel was killed. As a matter of fact, at that long session we had, Craig Corrie looked at my orange armband and he said, Ray, what's that orange armband? And I said, well, that's to protest against the torture by the U.S. of people in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib. And I said, Craig, what's that green thing on your wrist? And he said, oh, well, and he took it off. And he said, it says, Ray, Rachel Corrie, born April 10, 1979, died March 16th, 2003, not quite 24 years old. I was very moved. He said, "Ray, would you like to have it?" I said, "Well, it's your." He says, "I have plenty of them." I put that on my wrist, and I've worn it ever since. Okay, I've worn it ever since because when I feel a deficit in courage, I look at that and say, "Well, if Rachel Curry can, as she did, face into an Israeli bulldozer to protect the Palestinian home in which she had been living, McGovern, you can do what's necessary in these circumstances." What happened was she and other international volunteers who had always been immune to this kind of treatment from the Israelis, in other words, they hadn't been harmed, they hadn't been killed. Well, on this particular day, March 16th, 2003, the anniversary is today, 21st anniversary. On this particular day, the Israeli bulldozer commander was given the command to run over Rachel as the bulldozer headed toward this house they're about to demolish, and just to make sure that her back was broken, back up over her in full sight of her friends, other international volunteers. What was the message? The message was, international volunteers are no longer immune from this kind of treatment. Just try to do what Rachel Corrie did in terms of defending this Palestinian home. The same thing's going to happen to you. Now, what about the timing, Nima? March 16th, 2003. Oh, what happened 3 days later? Oh, that was the invasion, the attack on Iraq by US and UK forces. Oh, okay. So you think that had anything to do with the brazenness of the Israeli running over of Rachel Carr? Of course it did. They knew that there would be no mention in the Western press of the killing of this young woman there to help Palestinian people. And so it was, you know, propaganda. The message was gotten to the international volunteers, but no one else heard about this sort of thing. Now, the interesting thing, of course, where did this all happen? It happened in a place called Rafah. Why do I mention that? Because 1.4 million Gazans, Palestinians primarily, are holed up now in Rafah. As you know, Nima, I have a certain theological training, and I remember from the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian scriptures, a voice is heard in Ramah, a voice weeping for her children, and she will not be consoled. It is Rachel. It is Rachel weeping for her children without any consolation. Now, you can change Ramah from the Old Testament and the New to Rafah, and that's what you get today. Over 31,000 Palestinians already killed since October the 7th, most of them children and women. So when will it stop? Will only stop when people get their courage up and face down people like Biden and say, look, you have your own heritage here, that your people, you were lucky because your grandfather, 7 years old, got on that ship. Now, I was lucky, just to finish up on this. My grandparents' parents survived the famine. We don't know why. We kept asking about it. No one wanted to talk about it, okay? Just as when you come back from war, no one wants to talk about it. Well, think about what it must be like to watch your family die of starvation, okay? So we were a little disappointed, but we could understand why nobody wanted to talk about it. So in a word, I was lucky enough to be descended from a child of a survivor of the famine, of the great hunger, as they called it. And so my grandparents came from Ireland in the 1880s. And so they came to America and we prospered here. There's no reason why everyone shouldn't be able to prosper and why everyone shouldn't be able to escape man-made hunger, starvation. So that's how I feel today. And as I say, when I wear this, as I always do, and I'm on my fourth one now, they do break after a while. They're only plastic. But Corey always comes through with a new one in the mail. All I have to do is wait a week, okay? And in the meantime, I scotch tape it together. But this is the kind of, in the Catholic faith, we call this a sacramental, okay? It's an outward sign which gives you courage, which gives you an example to say, well, if Rachel Curry at age 23 can face into Israeli bulldozers, well, then I can do something much less heinous, but at least something toward justice. Again, St. Patrick's Day will be celebrated tomorrow here. The Irish government has sent representatives to meet with President Biden against great furor, against great opposition within Ireland. But everyone knows the economic realities, and that is that U.S. companies are embedded in Ireland with great tax advantages, and no one wants to lose jobs for the Irish people. So even Gerry Adams has explained, well, you do what you have to do sometimes, even though you may have to hold your nose. Thanks for listening, Nima. If I feel a little emotional about this, it's because I can identify in a special way with what Biden's father should have told him, and which my grandparents couldn't tell me because there was the great silence about the great hunger.